Good afternoon. Thank you, Steve, for that wonderful introduction. As you said, my name is Tyler Gilreath. I'm currently a master's student under Dr. David Kearns in the Department of Entomology at Texas A&M. One of the objectives, or one of the kind of parts of my master's project, is trying to determine susceptibility of different fall armyworm genotypes that possess this VIP3A resistant allele to BT plants and purified toxins. Just a quick little background on the fall armyworm. It is a major agronomic pest to many cropping systems, corn and cotton included. It's reported to infest more than 80 host species and can cause, you know, serious injury to both corn and cotton, and by feeding in the whorl and cotton, and then can feed on the fruiting structures on both of those. Managing this pest has really put a lot of reliance and a lot of heavy reliance on BT technologies. A little side note, Cryo-1AB and Cryo-1AC are ineffective for controlling fall armyworms. And then looking now, we get some more field-evolved resistance on Cryo-1F down in Puerto Rico and Brazil and southeastern parts of the U.S. And then we see now with a lot more reliance on Cryo-2AB2, we have actually seen where Cryo-1F resistant larvae have actually developed resistance to Cryo-2AB2 in a laboratory setting. But the good news is we do have VIP3A, which is our newest technology, and it is a different mode of action relative to those other two cryo proteins, and is incorporated in most of all your new hybrids and varieties. But not only, that's a good advantage there, but it's also, it has some activity on bollworms as well. So that leads me into my objectives, and in order to do this, we have three different objectives to determine what the susceptibility is. And in order to do that, the first one, we wanted to use the purified toxins to actually determine what the cross-resistant is to other BT toxins, other purified toxins. For all three objectives that I just mentioned, the insect types that I used, I had a resistant population that was collected from Bolgar 2 cotton out of Rapides Parish, Louisiana. Dr. Yang describes how he derived that in 2017. I have a known susceptible that was collected from Winsboro, Louisiana, and then we made a heterozygote by crossing both the RR and the SS. I would like to point out there was no differences in our reciprocal crosses for their susceptibility, so then we pulled them all together and we randomly used it throughout the assay. For that protein bioassay, so we put liquid diet, dispensed it in the 128 well trays, allowed it to dry, and then we overlaid that with the purified toxin. The toxins we used were Cryo-1F, Cryo-2AB2, Cryo-2AE, and VIP3A1. Once the protein had dried, we then placed one neonate in each individual cell that was less than 24 hours old. We had 16 larvae per replication with 4 replications. Once they were all infested, we then placed them in a growth chamber at those settings, and then we came back and assessed mortality and larval development after 7 days. How we statistically analyzed it, so the larval mortality was obviously a percentage where it was 100 times the number of dead larvae plus the number of first instar divided by the total number of insects assayed. And then our mortality was corrected using Abbott's formula. We used a probability analysis to create our LC50 values. And then in order to create a resistant ratio, you take the LC50 of a given population and divide that by the LC50 of another, and in our case, it was our RR and RS divided by our susceptible population. All this was analyzed using a 2A ANOVA with genotype and protein concentration as the two main factors, and then all the means were separated using Tukey's HSD with an alpha set at 0.05. A quick little point out here that anything that's above 10 when you're looking at resistance ratios is considered to be highly resistant, and you can see in those maroon bars is my RR genotype. And you can see it comes back at 39.5% more resistant than the susceptible. And the other two genotypes, you can see extremely susceptible to that VIP3A toxin. When we look at the other three toxins, all three genotypes were extremely susceptible. So it kind of pushes us now into our next two objectives of trying to determine cross-resistance and cross-crop resistance. But for those two, objective two was looking at some whole plant corn. These are the hybrids that I use, but what it represents is all the technologies that's available on the market now. I had three non-BTs, but they all have a star biome, When we look at the data, I present it all as one because there's no differences between them all. And then objective three, again, all the cotton varieties that are available on the market today. So for the whole plant corn, how we set it up was I put corn in a greenhouse, tried to keep it as insect-free as I could to get to the V5 to V7 stage. Once it reached that appropriate stage, I then dropped 6 neonates down into the world. They were, again, less than 24 hours old. We used 2 genotypes this time, RR and SS. And then we looked at mortality, larval development, damage, and percent of plants with live larvae. But this was all assessed 10 days after I infested it. But for the purpose of this talk, I'm only going to look at the percent plants with live larvae and the damage. And for that damage rating, we actually used the Davis scale of injury, which is a 1, has a few to note, a few pinholes, and then a 9, as most of the leaves have long lesions. For the cotton square, so we put cotton in the ground at the USDA facility in College Station. In order to get enough squares to perform the bioassay, I let it grow out, and then I targeted the match head to medium-sized squares. Once the cotton was ready, we pulled the squares off. I brought them back to the lab. I washed them, and I prepared them, and I placed them into these cups, as you can see in the bottom picture. Once they were in the cups, we then put 2 second instar larvae in each square. And then we used, again, all 3 genotypes for this one. It was replicated 4 times, and within each replication, there was 15 squares. Through the bioassay, through this whole 7-day period, the squares would be replaced as necessary. Once it was all infested, again, we put it in the growth chamber at the same settings. And then we came back 7 days after to assess the survivorship and the development of the larvae. For the analysis for those 2 methods that we used, the corn, the whole plant corn, the leaf injury is going to be transformed using a log X plus 1 scale. And then the plants containing live larvae are going to be transformed using an arson. For our square bioassay test, survivorship, again, was calculated as a percentage, except this time it's just the number of live larvae divided by the total number of larvae we assayed. All of this was analyzed using a 2-way ANOVA again, with genotype and the BT technology as the 2 main factors. And then again, we separated it using 2 keys HSD with an alpha set at 0.05. So this leads us in. We knew what the proteins were doing with the cross resistance. Now we wanted to see how these larvae, how do they perform on whole plant corn, and what's the cross-resistant to other BT corn technologies. So the data that we got from this, we have percent plants with live larvae on the vertical axis and our technologies across the bottom. Kind of the key points here is the non-BTs, you can see 100% of the plants that we checked had both RR and SS. 100% of the plants contain these larvae. When we move over to VIP3111, which is just Cryo-1AB and VIP3A. And again, if you'll remember, Cryo-1AB is not effective for fall armyworms, so the only thing to select for for killing them would be that VIP3A toxin. And as you can see, our RRs are performing with no differences compared to the non-BT. However, our SS, when they were introduced to the VIP3A toxin, you can see it had very high susceptibility to it. When you look at Herculex, which is just Cryo-1F corn, you can see our RRs have moderate survivorship on that, and there might be a little bit of some moderate resistance built into the because it is a field population, and so there might be a little bit of resistance within that population to Cryo-1F. However, kind of a one thing to point out here was that the larvae that we did collect, however, you're seeing just plants with live larvae in it. But if you take away that they didn't gain much and they were just first or second instars, real small worms, you'll kind of see that drop off, and it would match the other 3 technologies there where we had very low plants with live larvae. Looking at the Davis scale of injury rating again for the damage, again, non-BT had high damage to it for both genotypes. And then we look at the VIP3111 with RR showing that it's still being able to damage it. It is statistically different from the non-BT, but they're still surviving on it just well. And then, as I mentioned, those small worms, those small survivors on that Cryo-1F corn, you can see the damage. They're just not feeding like they are on non-BT or the VIP3111. So let's kind of wrap things up, moving into that third objective, which now we want to determine what the cross-crop resistance is using these same armyworms that have been selected on BT corn technologies to BT cotton technologies, and we're using those square tests now. the data, again, set up pretty much the same, except this time it's percent survivorship on that vertical axis, and then the technologies across the bottom again. And I kind of want to break this one down by genotype, because we had some interesting things happen here. If you look at RR in those maroon bars, you can see that no matter what technology it was placed on, you can see high survivorship with no differences across every technology. When we look at RS, again, we got high survivorship on non-BT, Bolgar 2, and White Strike with no differences between those two. However, when you introduce that VIP toxin in there with Bolgar 3 and White Strike 3, we see it drastically drop off, and we have very, really high mortality there. When you look at SS, it's telling pretty much the same thing. Non-BT and Bolgar 2, great survivorship. And then again, over in White Strike, it's not statistically different from the non-BT. But again, VIP, you can see that VIP toxin is really doing its work in controlling those on those squares. So kind of wrap things up. If you remember on the protein bioassay, the RR had that resistant ratio up there at 39.5 on the VIP3A toxin, where all other genotypes were susceptible to that one. And then when we looked at all the other toxins, all three of them were susceptible. The whole plant corn, the SS survived only on the non-BT and no other technologies, where the RR, you know, it showed that high survivorship on that VIP corn, with moderate survivorship again on Herculex corn. However, with no survivorship on the Electra, which contains Cry1F, when you stack it and you pyramid it into that Electra, we can see survivorship be diminished. And then the damage ratios for both genotypes basically told the same story that the percentage with live larvae told. And then lastly, the cotton square bioassay. So again, high survivorship with SS on non-BT and Bolgar 2, and kind of moderate on the White Strike. RS kind of mirroring the same thing with low survivorship on White Strike 3 and Bolgar 3, but surviving well on the other three. RR, again, high survivorship across any technology. So very interesting results for that. And with that, I'd like to acknowledge my major professor, Dr. David Kearns, Dr. Charles Suh, Dr. Fei Yang for all his wonderful help, and Jose Santiago Gonzalez for all his help as well. All the student workers, because it is a lot of work to do this. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Anybody have any questions for Tyler?
I believe I took it.
All right. Well, if you don't have any questions, let's thank our speakers.